This morning, I'd like to continue our Becoming Like Jesus series as we've been looking through the Gospels to see what Jesus did in the different circumstances of life and how we can learn from and imitate Him. Christianity is not just about joining a church and getting your name in the church directory. And it's more than being baptized and sitting in a pew on Sunday. You see, being a church member does not necessarily mean that you are a true Christian who is saved. If it does, then guys like Demas, Diotrephes, Hymenaeus, and Alexander were saved because they were church members. But we know what the Bible says about them. And you can do all that God has commanded you and still be lost because you can be the biggest hypocrite in the world. God is not after us just following a list of do's and don'ts. He's after our minds and hearts. And so a major part of Christianity is Christ in you, making an adjustment from the inside out. Colossians 1:27, God willed to make known what is the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me. You might say that I move out and Christ moves in. We're now to have the mind and heart of Christ. We are to think the way he would think, say what he would say, and act the way he would act. We're always to ask that question, what would Jesus do? Paul told the church at Corinth, be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. 1 Corinthians 11. John said that we are to walk in the same manner as he walked. 1 John 2. Or as Peter put it, we are to follow in his steps. 1 Peter chapter 2. Well, today I want to look at Jesus and dealing with ridicule. Okay, first, what is ridicule? I'm sure we've all received it at one time or another. I went through the public school system, and so I've certainly had my fair share of bullying. But it's malicious, belittling, mocking, insulting, name-calling, scoffing, or taunting to try to make you feel bad about yourself or to try to make you look bad in the eyes of others. And interestingly, a lot of the time, the person is slandering or talking bad about another person to try to feel better about themselves. Well, he's trying to feel better about himself, or he thinks that maybe it'll make him look better in the eyes of others. If he can lower and drop their estimation of you, who knows, it might raise their estimation of him. At least that's the idea. Well, as you know, if and when the opposition and the ridicule comes, some people, they get so discouraged that it really hinders their work, and some of them will even give up altogether. They'll throw in the towel. The book of Nehemiah, now that's a really good book showing us and a good example of perseverance in the face of ridicule and in the face of persecution. Another thing is that it's really easy to get angry when people are cutting you down, and then you respond with a very negative knee-jerk reaction. But something to keep in mind is that people usually resort to ridicule and ridiculing others because they are insecure in one way or another. Sometimes it's actually because they're jealous or they feel threatened by you. Now, other times when you make an argument that they don't like or they can't think of a counter argument, they'll resort to ridicule. Casey Luskin, he's an attorney, he said this, let me share some strategies on how to handle the personal attacks, the attempts to marginalize you with rhetoric. First, when you face such an attack, try not to take it personally. On the contrary, be encouraged because it's usually a sign that you're winning the argument. If your opponents had anything logically compelling to say, you can be sure they would be saying it. The fact that they feel compelled to resort to emotional rhetoric and personal attacks suggests that, on logical and evidential grounds, you've made a strong argument. Well, we find that Jesus' life is just filled with ridicule. They called him a glutton and a drunkard, Matthew 11. They called him a friend of tax gatherers and sinners, Matthew 11. They said he did miracles by the power of Beelzebul, Matthew 12. They called him a Samaritan with a demon, John 8. They said that he was misleading the nation, Luke 23. They joked that, well, he saved others, but he cannot save himself, Matthew 27, and so forth. And then there were those who had come around simply for the purpose of looking for a chance to accuse or discredit him. And we find passages like Luke 6, 7. The scribes and the Pharisees were watching him closely to see if he healed on the Sabbath in order that they might find reason to accuse him. It was their goal to possibly find a way that they could defame or vilify him in the eyes of the people. Have you ever had someone in your life where that was their goal? Okay, that's the only reason they ever came around. Well, Jesus had a bunch of them. And then, of course, after he was arrested, Jesus was mocked by the chief priests. He was mocked by Herod. He was mocked by the Roman soldiers and even mocked by the other criminals. So, for this morning, how did Jesus respond to the ridicule? Well, at times, he held his peace. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 11, if you have a Bible handy. Let's read this passage together. Now, this is where Jesus was talking to the multitudes about John the Baptist, and then he said one of the things that he often did, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." So let's read Matthew 11, verses 16 through 19. "But to what shall I compare this generation? It is like children sitting in the marketplaces who call out to other children and say, 'We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds.'" You don't play their game, and they'll often turn on you. Of course, I think these were just excuses for not listening, to make them feel better about ignoring John and Jesus. You see, what they called for in one, they condemned in the other. It doesn't matter what you do. Some people, they are going to reject you. But notice what Jesus said about this slandering. And it was indeed slander. They had never seen him drunk. They'd never seen him acting like a glutton. He said, "Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds," or as Luke put it, Luke recorded Jesus saying, "Wisdom is vindicated by all her children." In other words, let them say it. The truth will come out. See, time will tell, or the proof is in the pudding, as the saying goes. I can remember getting slandered while doing mission work in Australia this one time. And the missionary that I was working with, he advised that, no, I just keep on working and follow Jesus' advice in this passage. And sure enough, the truth came out and the person ended up looking really bad. Now, I could have spent all of my time arguing and fighting with that person. I could have spent all of my time trying to convince everyone else of the actual truth. That might have just made matters worse. 1 Peter 2:23, it says of Jesus' suffering, "And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously." There are many times where we find that Jesus was silent. While there was all kinds of ridicule and all kinds of false accusations being thrown at him. When Jesus was before Pilate, Matthew 27, we read this. "While he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he did not answer. Then Pilate said to him, 'Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?' And he did not answer him with regard to even a single charge." So the governor was quite amazed. And we also find this in Luke 23 when Jesus was before Herod. "And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there, accusing him vehemently. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. And we find it at other various times when he was receiving beatings and being ridiculed, as 1 Peter 2:23 talks about. So you may be asking, why? Why was he silent while all these false accusations and ridicule were being thrown at him? Well, we're not told. But I suspect it's because they were hard-hearted and it wouldn't have done any good anyway. And it may be, as Proverbs 26:4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him." You know, don't go down to their level. Don't give any credibility to their folly. I believe there are times when we are to hold our peace. Well, that'd be the best thing to do. And here's a question. Did Jesus ever lose control and hit someone? Could you call Jesus enough names to make him attack you? I mean, he could have zapped them. The elders are probably going to tell me to quit making sound effects from the pulpit. But he could have summoned 72,000 angels. Matthew 26, as he told Peter, "Do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" Now, I know the song says 10,000. That's actually 72,000. The word for this is meekness, not weakness, but meekness. It's translated from the Greek word proutes, which was sometimes used to refer to a wild animal that had been tamed and brought under control. It's now under word of command. You see, meekness is talking about power under control. The oxen has just got great strength and the ability to cause all kinds of damage, but one with this characteristic allows itself to be yoked and directed. It's the horse broken only to the bit. It has nothing to do with having a broken spirit. Unlike weakness, meekness is a conscious choice. It's having the power to do something, but restraining from it. It's power under control. Now, maybe like me, there were times in school that you got into a fight because of a nasty remark that was directed at you. That is very immature and childish. Have we grown out of that? In this example of Jesus, it is indeed one that we are to follow. The New Testament, we find passages like 1 Corinthians 4:12. "When we are reviled, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure. When we are slandered, we try to conciliate." 1 Peter 3:9, "Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead." And you remember what Jesus said in Luke 6. "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you." The word for bless in these passages, it's from eulogeo, and it means to speak well of. And what about praying? "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Luke 23:34. You see, praying for someone, that can actually help to change your attitude toward them. And so instead of letting them get under our skin, instead of losing control, there are times when we should either say nothing or even return a blessing. When I was about 18, I remember this older preacher, and he gave me some advice on being a minister and just being a Christian in general. He said, "Never lose your cool." Proverbs 17:27, "He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding." So how could Jesus do that in those situations? How could he keep his cool? Now, obviously, it takes quite a bit of self-control, but I think it's mainly because he didn't get his significance from men. Now, that's something for all of us to think about. If my significance comes from other people, then I'm always going to be worried about what other people think and what the other people say about me. What really matters is what God thinks and what God says about me. I'd like to share with you this poem that somebody wrote. It's called Jesus Held His Peace. The day when Jesus stood alone and felt the hearts of men like stone and knew he came but to atone, that day he held his peace. They witnessed falsely to his word. They bound him with a cruel cord and mockingly proclaimed him Lord, but Jesus held his peace. They spat upon him in the face. They dragged him on from place to place. They heaped upon him all disgrace, but Jesus held his peace. Dear friend, have you for far much less, with rage, which you called righteousness, resented slights with great distress. Remember, Jesus held his peace. So at times, he held his peace. At other times, he held his ground. Okay, well, let's turn over now to John chapter 7. Let's see what happened when some of Jesus' brothers confronted him. And this is before the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles. So John chapter 7, let's read verses 2 through 8. Now the feast of the Jews, the Feast of Booths, was near. Therefore his brothers said to him, "Leave here and go into Judea, so that your disciples also may see your works which you are doing. For no one does anything in secret when he himself seeks to be known publicly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For not even his brothers were believing in him. So Jesus said to them, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always opportune. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify of it that its deeds are evil. Go up to the feast yourselves. I do not go up to this feast because my time has not yet fully come." They weren't believing in him. It sounds to me they're just kind of being jerks here. Okay, they're telling him, you know, you need to go up there in celebrity fashion to the capital instead of just preaching here in Galilee. And it seems that they had a very different idea on what the Messiah should be doing. But Jesus, he stood his ground here. He answered them. They needed to be corrected. They needed their thinking to be changed. And as we can see from Acts chapter 1 and verse 14, and sure enough, they did. They changed their minds later, and they came to believe in him. Now, let's turn over to John chapter 8, and we can see from verse 30, all these people were coming to believe in him, but there were some, they had a real problem with the things he was saying. So here, he, sure enough, took the time to confront and correct them. We can see them resorting to ridicule in verse 41, verse 48, and 52. Now, verse 48, they're getting pretty creative. They coupled a racial slur with a spiritual slur, a Samaritan with a demon. But let's read verses 52 through 54. The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died and the prophets also. And you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste of death. Surely you're not greater than our father Abraham who died. The prophets died too. Who do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God." And of course, Jesus went on. Now, obviously, a man with a demon can't take responsibility for his actions or his words. They didn't really believe that. That's just ridicule. And this is what we often see when people couldn't outwit Jesus. Okay, it starts with a challenge, and then it turns into ridicule, and then it ends up in an attack. Because you see, at the end of this exchange, they picked up stones to stone him. But there was some confusion, and there were some things that they needed to know. And so Jesus had this exchange with them. He answered their ridicule. The people listening needed to hear the gospel. Proverbs 26:5, it says, "Answer a fool as his folly deserves, lest he be wise in his own eyes." There are times to be silent, Proverbs 26:4. And there are times to correct someone. Proverbs 26:5. Now let's turn over to Luke chapter 16. Okay, this is the time when the Pharisees, they're scoffing at Jesus. And he just made the statement that someone cannot serve two masters. And he concluded, you cannot serve God and wealth. So let's read Luke 16, 14 through 18. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things and were scoffing at him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. Since that time, the gospel of the kingdom of God has been preached, and everyone is forcing his way into it. But it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one stroke of the letter of the law to fail. Everyone who divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and he who marries one who is divorced from a husband commits adultery. So Jesus confronted him here. You see, he did not pull any punches. And I think that this discourse, okay, verses 15 through 18, is about the main problems of the Pharisees. These are four major issues that Jesus had with them. Now, verse 18, that's just a general statement. It's not an exposition on marriage, divorce, remarriage. You want a more complete picture, you've got to read Matthew 19 and 1 Corinthians 7. But this is an example of how the Pharisees manipulated and twisted the word of God. They were totally going against God's will in this area. So, why did he take the time to confront them? Well, I think the crowds needed to know this about their religious leaders, the ones that they were following. Why? Because if a blind man is leading a blind man, okay, the blind man is guiding the blind man, both will fall into a pit, Matthew 15, 14. It's a big deal. Okay, the question is, what do we see from these instances that was different from the others? Well, I think that these were not about defending himself personally, but about proclaiming the gospel. And he certainly wasn't slinging mud back at them. You see, is the ridicule directed at you or at the gospel? Could it result in someone being lost? We are not, as far as I can tell, we're not to defend ourselves personally, but we are told to always be ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, 1 Peter 3:15. As with everything else, this is going to take some wisdom and maturity to know when. Because at times, Jesus held his peace, and at other times, he held his ground. The key seems to be where the ridicule is directed, and if it could hinder the gospel. There was an anonymous article written some years ago. I thought it had some good advice in it, and so I'm going to read it to you. It's called, To Every Man His Work. The Lord has given to every man his work. It is his business to do it, and the devil's business to hinder him, if he can. So sure as God gives a man a work to do, Satan will try to hinder him. He may present other things more promising. He may allure you by worldly prospect. He may assault you with slander, torment you with false accusations, set you to work defending your character, employ pious persons to lie about you, editors to assail you, and excellent men to slander you. You may have Pilate and Herod, Annas and Caiaphas all combined against you, and Judas standing by to sell you for 30 pieces of silver. And you may wonder why all these things have come to pass. Can you not see that the whole thing is brought about through the craft of the devil to draw you off from your work and hinder your obedience to Christ? Keep about your work. Do not flinch because the lion roars. Do not stop to stone the devil's dogs. Do not fool around your time chasing the devil's rabbits. Do your work. Let liars lie. Let sectarians quarrel. Let editors publish. Let the devil do his worst. But see to it that nothing hinders you from fulfilling the work God has given you. He has not sent you to make money. He has not commanded you to get rich. He has never bidden you to defend your character, nor has he bidden you to contradict falsehoods about yourself, which Satan and his servants may start to peddle. If you do these things, you will do nothing else. You will be at work for yourself and not for the Lord. Keep about your work. Let your aim be as steady as a star. Let the world brawl and bubble. You may be assaulted, wrangled, insulted, slandered, wounded, and rejected. You may be chased by foes, abused by them, forsaken by friends, despised and rejected of men. But see to it that with steadfast determination and with unfaltering zeal, you pursue that great purpose of your life and the object of your being, until at last you can say, I have finished the work which you, dear God, have given me to do. Receiving ridicule is never easy, but as a Christian, it is to be expected. Matthew 5, 11 and 12, blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. When people look at you and me, do they see Jesus? It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.